you hear me? Okay, just want to make sure the mic is on. I'm J.C. Bradbury, and if my accent doesn't give it away, I'm a Braves fan. So if you couldn't figure that out. This is a paper that I started out of frustration that I decided to do, and this is joint work that I did with Sean Foreman, who you've already seen. And if you haven't seen here today, you know who he is. And the reason Sean got involved in the project is that he has some very good data that he was happy to share with me, and we worked together on the project. By trade, I'm an economist. And something that's kind of interesting is that the field of exercise physiology and studying how the human body functions and works actually has its origins in business schools. That is, you had business professors who were wanting to know how long people could type or how long they could do certain types of activities so they would know how to value their labor when they were hiring it. You know, am I working it too much or too little? And I came at this from sort of the same perspective. A lot of the work that I've done in economics has been trying to value baseball players as labor market inputs. And I'm a baseball fan, and when I hear people talk about pitch counts, and I'll talk some about the history of that and where that's been going lately, people seem to talk with such certainty about how important they were. And there are people on the other side who say, well, they're not important. Well, there's some conflicting evidence on this. And so I wanted to do a study for myself, and Sean and I sat down to design one to where we could actually look at how pitchers were performing based on how often they were pitching and how much they were pitching. Now, looking at injuries is the next step. So you might be thinking as I walk through this, well, you're not actually studying injuries here. Well, I'm not, but we have to do the first step first. Actually, I'll talk some about what it would take to study pitcher injuries here in just a second. Okay, so let's start off. I was going to start off with a little story, but I'm going to go to the story second. I decided to start off with some macro data. And that is, we want to take a look at how the average number of pitches thrown per starter has changed over time. What you see is it actually has been quite stable. This is the median for the sample is 99 pitches per game, almost right at that magic number of 100. Sometimes we see pitchers throwing more or less, but really over the range of two decades, the average number per season has ranged from 97 to 101. And this is pretty much random, so it's pretty clear that this is stable. But if all we're hearing in the news reports are, well, you know, you're watching a game and they're talking about, well, you can't pitch so much. It looks like pitches are staying the same. Well, what in fact has changed is the variance. And it's hard to fit everything on one slide, so let me just sort of walk through. Up on top here, these are the maximum pitches thrown in a game from 1988 through 2009. And the highest one there is 172. Anyone guess who that was? It was Wakefield, yeah, that's who it was. Knuckleballer, of course, throwing 172. But there is a clear pattern of a decline in allowing pitchers to pitch many pitches, or at least deep into games. And I wish we could go back further, but this is really the earliest we can get reliable pitch count data, and maybe we'll be able to find some more in the past, but what's clear is that clearly we're using pitch counts a lot more to evaluate pitchers, deciding whether to leave them in the game or not. But on the bottom graph, what I have here is a box plot that shows how the variance has changed, and that is we have on the high end of the average number of pitches a pitcher might start in a given season, notice that variance has shrunk. So in 1988, we had some pitchers who were going up to 150 pitches a game. There was more than one. That's within the 95% confidence interval here. But we also had some pitchers who were being pulled with less than 50 pitches. As we come towards the present, the median is staying the same. The maximum or the high end of pitches that pitchers are allowed to throw is declining. But pitchers are also allowed to throw more on the low end. Now, this might seem kind of strange and run counter to what's been going on with pitch counts, but actually, I think it tends to explain the concern out of having pitchers pitch too much, is that if you send a pitcher out to the mound and he doesn't have it today, you might as well say, well, someone's got to take one for the team. You're staying out there for at least 70 pitches. You know, we've already blown this game, or you're just going to have to stick it out. While in the past, if a guy went out there, the manager might say, well, he clearly had too much fun last night. You're out of here after the first inning. We need to try and win this game. So, and again, I'm imposing the story, looking back at the data that seems to make sense. I'm not saying that's exactly what's going on. But what I want to point out is that, you know, the obvious that we've all observed is that, yes, pitch counts are becoming important and people are paying attention to them. Well, now I want to go to an individual story. And I picked one person out of anecdote. And let's talk about Steven Strasburg, because he is someone who I hear he's a great prospect, but I rarely get to see him pitch. I'd like to see what he can do, you know, and when he does seem to pitch. But Strasburg is someone whom the Nationals have taken a very conservative approach with. And I put some quotes up here just to show some of the types of things that are being said openly about how the Nationals have decided to treat Strasburg. So this is from, and I couldn't find any reliable minor league pitch data for this presentation. I didn't do a looking all that hard for it, but I think it's very clear that they were not allowing him to throw much more than 80 pitches a start when he was in the minor league. May have been able to go over that some, just barely. But when he starts out in 2010, in the 2010 season, which he'd ultimately end up in the major leagues, we're keeping your pitch counts very low. We want to protect you. The idea being, is you don't want to wear your arm out. We want to save some, and we're going to keep you healthy in the long run. When he makes it to the major leagues, the Nationals openly said they had a strict pitch count limit on him of 100. Now, apparently it wasn't a strict pitch count, but they weren't going to go too much over 100, and that's where he was going to go. Well, the interesting thing is about the end of this story is, well, he had 160 inning limit for the entire season between the minors and major leagues. He didn't even make it that far. In August, he came out of the game, and he had to have a Tommy John surgery, UCL replacement surgery. So even with all this precaution, he didn't survive. Now, one of the things I wanted to look at is sort of, I'm looking at performance here. Let me take a quick look at Steven Strasburg's numbers and see how he did when he pitched. And how much rest he had. So I have two graphs here. And the yellow didn't show up as well as I thought. It's hard to tell on the computer screen, but that's kind of a junk table. I just put it up there to show you there's not much of a pattern there. But in his 2010 season, he was averaging he pitched between 84 and 99 pitches. 99 pitches was the greatest amount he threw in 2010 in the majors. And this is before his injury. His last game, I think he came out after about 50 some odd pitches. I took that one off. Now, you'll see a gap in there. He had a DL stint, so he did get hurt. But what he hurt for the DL stint wasn't his elbow. It was his shoulder that he was pulled for, inflammation of the shoulder. And it's really fun to go back and read these stories about the injury. Oh, it's nothing to worry about. This happens all the time. You know, and everyone's optimistic. This is no big deal. And then before you know it, the guy's out for a year and a half. And so after 123 innings pitched, he's gone for the season. He's not pitching over 100 pitches, yet he still gets hurt. And what this shows down here, you have earned runs are red, walks are blue, strikeouts are yellow, and home runs allowed are green. What I just wanted to show is that there wasn't really much pattern in his performance. And if you squint, like one of the C&I posters, you might find a little pattern in there. Oh, it's going trending up or down based on what he did. And that's fine. But it's too small a number of observations to tell much about anyway. But the point is that I'm picking a story that deliberately goes against what everyone says should be working. I'm not saying this explains everything. But here is a team that's being very careful with a top prospect. He's valuable. They don't want to lose him. And it's an attitude that a lot of other teams have, which is what the macro data was showing. So I'm going to ask the question, why are we in the age of pitch counts? And I think part of the reason is that no one wants to be responsible for destroying Steven Strasburg or any other young prospect. To this day, if you mention Mark Pryor, someone's going to grumble something about Dusty Baker ruining Mark Pryor. Whether he did or not, I don't know. But certainly, he gets a lot of blame for that. The Nationals have a valuable commodity they're trying to sell to their fans. What limiting his pitch counts do is they limit one type of error, type 1 error. It prevents them from making the mistake of having him pitch too much and possibly getting hurt. So we're going to limit the negative consequence of over-pitching. And there may be some rationale to keeping a pitcher fresh, keeping him out there. Also, you know, you want to avoid the blame. There is some argument that has been made, it's often called the Verducci effect, that when we bring up pitchers too quickly and their arms aren't seasoned enough, they get hurt very quick, but I have looked at the Verducci effect. Several other Sabre administrations have looked at it. There doesn't appear to be any support for ramping up pitcher workloads, causing them to get hurt or regress in performance. It's very easy to sort of look at the, I should say, when you look at the data, it all just appears kind of random, and you can pick guys out there. Although if he got hurt, his inning jumped up, but there doesn't seem to be any systematic predictability to this. But we also have, and so this is what I have, the seen errors. You know, you don't want to be seen as hurting Steven Strasburg, but you also have the unseen error, and that is type 2 error. If you take Steven Strasburg out of the lineup, you don't get the benefits from having him in there. You underpitched him. You're making a huge mistake. You might end up missing the postseason, and this year, supposedly the Nationals are going to cap Strasburg again at 160 innings, and they might actually be in the playoff hunt this year. You know, we'll see. It's early. But imagine they are. And the Nationals say, sorry, Strasburg's done. His turn in the rotation is going to go to someone else who's not nearly as good. So the Nationals talk tough now. Let's see what happens when the time comes. I don't know how that'll go. And it may be easier to make that decision when your team isn't doing so well like the Nationals have been doing. Of course, Strasburg's injury history has meant they have had to make the tough decision. So, you know, pitch counts, while we use it to protect them to stop type 1 error, we might be creating some type 2 error. But another type, and this is related to this, is that maybe we're counting pitches because it's something to do. We're seeing all these young pitchers get hurt, or valuable pitchers get hurt. What can we do? You know, well, just do that. You know, we've got to make people safer. You know, my daughters have car seats right in the back of their car. You put them in the back seat, and they have these little booster seats you can put back there as well. Well, they've done studies of crash tests, and the booster seats don't seem to help very much. Certainly the child restraints do, but once you reach a certain age, just being in the back seat wearing a seatbelt. But we got a lot of scared parents out there. And as a parent myself, you know, my daughter says, I'm going to sit in the booster seat. I'm going to go right ahead. You know, it's not hurting me. Sometimes we just want to be careful, and maybe we want to be able to say that, you know, we're in control. By using pitch counts, we're managing Strasburg, and you can answer to the fans for that. But I also want to mention something else, because I don't want to sound completely negative about pitch counts. There are some very good reasons for believing that pitch counts or pitch limits may help protect pitchers. And in particular, I want to take a look at the academic literature from youth pitchers, that is, looking at how much youth pitchers pitch. And this is a large sample of papers. You don't have to look at them all. You'll recognize probably two, at least one name on here. You'll see Andrews, no, Dr. Andrews. Everyone knows him. He's on a few of these papers. Glenn Fleissig is on all of these papers. But there is definitely clear evidence that limiting or that over-pitching by youth baseball pitchers is damaging to their arms. They're having more pain, more surgeries, and that's why most youth leagues have implemented pitch limits. You can only pitch so much per week and so much per game, and they're very strict about it. But one of the things that I found most amazing, and the reason I decided to do this study, is that when you go and you look at the sports medicine research and how adult pitchers have responded to pitching more, this is the extent of the literature on it until this paper that Sean and I have written. There's one other paper that looks at major league pitchers that you can find in PubMed databases, which is really the main database of sports or all medical research, but most sports medicine research is in there. And the other paper really doesn't look at pitch limits per se. This evidence I find in this paper doesn't really contradict or support that other paper. But this paper also has Glenn Fleissig and James Andrews on it. And they looked at college baseball pitchers who are much closer to their major league counterparts. And what they did was they put these pitchers in a lab and they had them simulate 7 to 9 inning games. The pitchers didn't know how long they were going to be in. They tried to simulate game situations as much as possible. They had hitters in the lab. And what they looked was they took biomarkers, I guess, using biomechanical cameras to see how their movement was changing over the course of the game. And one of the things that they found was that we know there's some things that pitchers can do that can cause them to become injured. That is, how their mechanics change and things that are more likely to lead to injury. The amount of pitches thrown did not predict these types of behaviors that lead to injury. So in fact, they don't find any support for pitching more, causing injury, or dampening performance. So So this raises two points. One is that we see that adults may be different than children. And that's not surprising. Youth baseball players are growing. There's a lot of development going on. A lot of damage that can be done to a youth baseball player won't happen to an adult. But it also highlights the further need for study of this question, particularly among adults. So let me jump into what I'm going to look at here in the study and what we looked at. So we're going to look at the effect of pitches thrown on performance. And I want to make this clear that performance does not equal injuries. I'm trying to look at one marker of how pitchers are responding to pitching a lot or pitching little. If you pitch very little, are you going to pitch better? If you pitch a lot, are you going to pitch worse? Now, this also may tell us something about injuries. In particular, as you become injured, and we often hear about pitchers, they're having some pain, and they're working through it, and before you know it, after two or three starts, they're pulled, just like Strasburg was. We should start seeing some diminished performance. But again, we just have to infer that. And at the end, I'll talk some about what a study of injuries would need to have, because it's quite complicated, all the factors you have to look at, and the fact that sometimes pitchers will be pitching less, and they'll get injured more, because they were already hurt, so that's going to complicate things. But I'm going to look at two different types of impacts of pitchers, and that is an immediate effect, where I'm going to look at, let's say you have one high-pitched game. So was it 2 years ago, or maybe it was 3 years ago, when Edwin Jackson threw 150 pitches in a game to get a no-hitter and walk 27 batters along the way, something insane like that. So, what was it? 2010 when he did that? Yeah, so, yeah, 149 pitches. So, and, you know, the next game after that was a typical Edwin Jackson game, which, you know, who knows what's going to happen. So there's that one thing. So did you have that really high number, and were you really worn out the next game? And a lot of this plays into how the human body recovers. I'm going to talk about that in terms of rest days in just a second. Maybe taking some days off would have helped. But we also need to look at the cumulative impact. That is, maybe if you're consistently facing high pitch limits or pitch counts, you're pitching a lot of pitches every game out, this is going to build up. So not just in a case like occasionally staying up at night late. You can deal with that the next day. But if you're consistently getting 2-3 hours sleep, you really start to drag. So the question is, if you're doing this over time, so what I want to do is look at how many pitchers were throwing in the previous 5 and 10 games to see how that affected their performance. And the data that I have here, and at the time that Sean and I began doing this study, went all the way up to 2009. I'm not quite done there. We're looking at major league starting pitchers, and I want to get those who had less than 15 days of rest. Now, the reason I did this is I wanted to avoid pitchers who were going on the DL. And this was a great way just to get them off. Because you don't want to have someone say, wow, he's had 25 days of rest, and he comes back and he stinks. That could really, when you're looking at big changes like that, that could really ruin the data set. So I just wanted to pull those pitchers out, make sure we didn't have anyone who was pitching injured or just coming back from an injury who's going to have a lot of rest. And what we're going to do is I wanted to look at pitchers in major league game situations. And here's something that's kind of funny. This paper is going to be published later this year in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research. And it was very interesting going into this field as an outsider. You had a mathematician and an economist sending a paper. We have biomechanists, exercise physiologists, doctors. And they're used to taking in patients, or I should say subjects, that bring them into a room. You're going to do this. We're going to watch you. We're going to record you. And when you do this, you have to get all types of testing waivers and pass institutional review boards. And I remember there was one reviewer said, oh, well, they didn't get IRB approval, which is your subject review board. It's like, well, these men, they played baseball for 20 years. They agreed to do that. We're just taking the stats from them. Oh, okay. So this is a new type of analysis that hadn't been seen. And when I talked to some of the people who work with do your typical type of studies, they were interested in using stats in this way. And this, you know, comes from my interest in past experience with sabermetrics to look at the data in this way. But what I needed to do, because I was going to use real-world data, we have to make sure we're controlling for factors that we're not going to have in a lab. If I'm in a lab, I can say, here's the temperature. I can count exactly how many pitches you're throwing. I have cameras that look exactly the way you're throwing things. In a major league situation, there's lots of other things going on. You're facing different types of hitters. You're playing in different types of parks. You have different amounts of rest. We have different abilities. And so these are some things that I used to control. And I looked at, first off, I used ERA, just to look at what was your earned run average in a game based on a few other factors. For example, how many pitches did you throw in the last game? Or how many pitches did you average going in the previous 5 games or previous 10 games? But I also wanted to know how many off days did you have in between starts? What was your ERA in general? Someone took the average for the season. If I was looking at strikeouts, walks, or homers, which are also things I looked at, I looked at what your seasonal average was. And I used a lot of different potential controls to see how this might affect performance, and it didn't seem to matter. I just wanted to, better pitchers are normally going to have lower ERAs, so I need to control for that. Look at the age, and I'm going to break age out in a second, and the results are sort of interesting when you break them out by age. And I also wanted to take advantage of differences across seasons. So I'm going to use some dummy indicator variables when I'm estimating this data to look at these pitchers. And what's going to happen is there's some mathematical calculation you're going to go on looking at the data. They're going to look at how does performance change when all these other things change, and then it's going to isolate what happens when pitches thrown changes and how many earned runs are given up in the game by the pitcher or strikeout. And so I'm going to use an estimation technique. It's called fractional polynomial multiple regression analysis. And it's quite complicated, and I had to learn quite a bit about it to use it. And one of the reasons I wanted to use it is that the effect may not be linear, although I do find the effect is linear. But if it was not linear, that is, let's say a few pitches more, as you pitch more and more, each pitch does more and more damage, or does less and less damage. We have an increasing effect or a diminishing effect. This type of estimation technique allows me to look at the data and find that. And the interesting thing is that we didn't find much impact or nonlinear impact. So let's jump ahead here to the main results here. I'm going to focus on ERA for this presentation. And I have some other results for strikeouts, walks, homers that I'd be happy to share with you. You can get the paper as well. It should be coming out soon. And I had a link to it online. I don't know if they're going to put these presentations up. The link is within this PowerPoint presentation. Okay, right here on the solid line, we have three lines. You sort of a solid line, a dashed line, and a dotted line. And on the x-axis, we have pitches per game. And right where all of them cross is 99 pitches. So they have a slope that all crosses about 99, which is the median. And what we see is that the solid line is how many pitches did you throw in the last game, and how much was your ERA in the previous game. Now, I actually just put up here a sample ERA and based it at an average of 4.5, or just for simplicity, just so you can get a reference point. So imagine this is an average pitcher in a game, and he's pitched, say, instead of going from 100, he goes up to 120. You see that upward slope means that for every pitch a pitcher threw, his ERA increased in the following game by about 0.007. So that's a very small amount. I have a table here in a second that'll put this in perspective a little bit easier. If you, for every one pitch you average more than over the previous 5 games, your ERA increased by 0.14. And if your 10-game average increased by a pitch, your ERA was expected to rise by 0.22. If you watch football, you know 7, 14, 21 here pretty much. We're going up by a touchdown when you're going from 1, 5, 10-game averages. You want to think about it like that. But one of the interesting things is the cumulative effect seems to be greater, and that's no surprise. The more you pitch at a high level, the more likely you are to not pitch well. So the occasional game doesn't seem to matter too much. But let's jump over here and look at, think about it like this. If another way to think about it is look at this table. What I have on this chart, you have a previous, how many pitches you threw in the previous game more than you normally would. How many pitches would it take to raise your ERA by 0.25? And for all pitchers, you would need to pitch about 38 pitches in the preceding game to increase your ERA by 0.25. If your 5-game average increased by 19, so it takes a lot lower number for your 5-game average to increase or make your performance suffer as much as 38 pitches took just for pitching a lot in the previous game. And your 10-game average, if you just pitch 11 more pitches, if you average 11 more pitches more, then that's all it takes to raise your ERA by 0.25. But one interesting thing is that when you break this down by age group, and I have three different age groups. I have under 25, 25 to 34, and over 34. And I want to jump down really quick to the over 34 group. because this is one of the most fascinating results I think is in the study, and in terms of how older players play. If you're an older player over 34, it basically took 58 pitches more than normal to raise your ERA by 0.25. Older pitchers were less affected by having one game where they had a lot of extra pitches. Or they benefited less when they had one game with very few. But when you get to the five-game averages, well, for most pitchers, it takes 19 extra pitches. You go from 100 pitches to 119. If you average that, you're going to be a 0.525 ERA worse pitcher. It only takes older pitchers 16 pitches, 116 pitches in that example. And it only takes them 11 pitches as opposed to 12 for the younger groups. So older pitchers seem to be able to handle a one-game ramp-up a lot better than the younger guys. And the interesting thing is that there's a lot of literature on how older athletes handle situations differently than younger athletes. And take, for example, in golf. One of the first things that goes when you're a golfer and your athletic ability is your driving distance. And one of the things we happen to see is that guys, when they start losing their ability to drive long distances, they have to compensate for this. And one way to do this is to hit more fairways. And there have been studies of this that find that older golfers are able to compensate for their diminished physical skill with smarter play. And I've also found some evidence for this among baseball players, both hitters and pitchers. Baseball, both pitchers and hitters improve in their ability to walk as they get older. In terms of pitchers, they tend to walk fewer batters as they get older. Older hitters tend to walk more. While something like batting average, slugging percentage, those things tend to decline a lot earlier. So, but imagine this situation. If you watch baseball, again, this is a lot of post hoc rationalization here. You know, so you have a pitcher comes out of the mound, a young kid says, "Coach, I can go get him." You know, the hitter says, "Give me the ball." You have no idea what you're doing. You walk there, there's an old veteran there. "Coach, I know how my arm feels, I can go." Okay. Maybe the old guys are the ones who can credibly tell their manager, "No, look, I really am okay, although I've thrown a lot of pitches," and they get left in there. Who knows? Again, I'm just trying to rationalize this result, but I think it is neat, and it does seem to fit with a lot of other studies that have been done in baseball and outside of baseball with how aging manifests. Now, how about rest days? One of the things that I found in terms of rest days is that basically, when you take a look at how many rest days pitchers had, they almost all had at least 3 days of rest. Less than 0.5% of the sample pitched on less than that. So we don't have a lot of analysis of what happens if you pitch on 1 or 2 days rest. But beyond getting your standard 3-4 days rest, there really isn't much benefit. In fact, I found that basically every off day you have beyond the standard norm increases or lowers your ERA by about 0.015. For a 4.5 pitcher, that's about a 1% decrease in your ERA for every off day you have. But one thing I want to say about this estimate, it's not statistically significant by any standard means. I mean, no matter what you think of that, the point is that it's a very tiny effect. Sitting your pitcher, having a skip a turn in a rotation, and I'm not opposed to having a manager say, you know, you don't feel well, let's skip a turn. But don't expect them just to recover all that much. There doesn't seem to be a lot of recovery. And if you understand something about the physiology of the human body, when pitchers have been studied, one thing they found is that their baseline levels of muscle recovery are pretty much back to normal after 3 days of rest, no matter what has happened. So you have a lot of recovery for those first few days afterwards, and then your arm doesn't get a lot better. So there is a rationale to having days off, 4 or 5 days, but it doesn't make much sense to go much longer than that. So when I see teams talking about going to 6-7-man rotations, I don't think there's a benefit in terms of doing that, in terms of maybe having more pitchers and able to pitch them more. I mean, but there may be some benefits in the fact that you always have someone who can step into the rotation if someone gets hurt. So, yeah, I cited a study down there which found that after rest, the markers of muscle damage have returned to normal. Well, let me just give you a quick sort of summary of the findings here. And that one is that there does seem to be a positive relationship between pitches thrown and performance that is virtually linear. So that if you're pitching more, your ERA is going to go up. And that's a bad thing. But this effect is very, very small. Like I said, it's going to take about 19 pitches, or actually in one game scenario, nearly 40 pitches to make you a lot worse pitcher. And so you can use this. But, you know, so it would have 38 pitches versus 19-11. So I have just a summarized sort of what I said up there earlier. But one of the things I didn't talk about was the components. Where do you think pitchers suffer the most? And this is something that I found was quite interesting. I thought we'd see, if a pitcher pitched a lot, we'd see a lot fewer strikeouts. You know, you're tired, you're not going to be able to have the power to do that. Strikeouts are not impacted at all. The effect on walks is actually the opposite of what you predict. If you pitch a lot more, throw a lot more pitches, you're less likely to walk batters in the following game. I don't know, maybe that's just you. I was out here a long time last time, I'm just throwing it in the zone this time. I don't know what that is. I think what we're really finding is that there's not much effect there. When you have a sample that's this large, statistical significance is an easy thing to achieve. Just going to be in one direction or another. But home runs were something that were given up more. The more about every pitch you threw increased your home run rate by about 1% to 2%. So that's where most of the ERA gains were happening. That is, pitchers weren't pitching as well. Maybe they were getting tired. Who knows? But they were giving up more home runs. And this is the area that pitchers, while they have some control over, they don't have a ton of control over. So I thought it was interesting that that's where the strongest effect was. And the additional days of rest beyond the norm didn't seem to have much impact on how pitchers performed. And where this becomes most relevant is in the postseason. A team, you know, you're having extra off days built into the postseason. Well, most postseasons, maybe not this year, but if you have extra off days built into the postseason, you get some rest, you might say, we're going to take our top three pitchers and go with them, put the other one in the bullpen. And a lot of people will say, well, they're going to be tired. But a lot of the evidence out there shows that that extra rest really doesn't help. So that's just some evidence to focus on that. But what I want to point out here is sort of what I call the post part of the results. And one of my former professors in graduate school was Tyler Cowan. And I remember him always saying, you know, what's the postcard? What did you find? What are the practical results here in what we're finding? So that if I'm trying to explain this to trainers or a pitching coach, how should I know how to treat my pitchers? How do these results help me? Because what I do find is that, yes, the more you pitch does seem to impact how you perform in the future. But one of the things about that performance is that the impact is very small. You basically have to pitch a lot. So definitely it's something that pitching coaches and managers should be mindful of. Hey, he's pitched a lot. But if you're out there on the mound, the pitcher's looking good, things are going well, and you don't have a lot of good options in the bullpen, you might say, we're going to stick with this guy a little bit longer. And you can actually use this this benchmark, the .007 increase in ERA for every pitch thrown, is a benchmark. Well, how much worse is he going to be in his next start? You know, do we have a chance to skip him in the rotation? Well, that may not matter very much. So there's some very clear practical advice in here, and that we have some simple rules of thumb that are going to tell us how pitchers or how to treat pitchers. And so let's bring this back to a debate we might have. We have a new school teacher who says, you know, we really got to limit pitchers and how much they're throwing versus someone like Nolan Ryan. Give him the ball, let him go out there every day like I did. How does this help solve this debate? Well, it's just more information. I think one of the things that it shows that both parties are somewhat right in this, and that, yes, pitching more does seem to tax pitchers and make them perform a little worse. However, it's not something to get so upset over. I think it would be wrong to take a look at Mark Pryor's pitch count and say, Dusty Baker ruined him by pitching him so much. Now, you might want to say, well, I was watching those games, Mark Pryor was clearly laboring, he wanted out. That's another thing to say that. But just looking at the raw pitch count numbers don't tell us very much. Now, as I said, this is step number one. Step one is just looking at performance. And that's because it's very easy for us to observe performance. Observing injury is very difficult. So let's say I wanted to take a look at how pitchers performed, how many pitches you threw per game in a season, the average per game. You want to see how much you pitched on average per start over the course of a season. And I wanted to predict the impact on the likelihood of you're on the DL. So I ran this little study, and I looked at, you know, what's the likelihood you're on the DL and you pitched a lot. What I found was that every pitch you averaged higher per game started lowered your likelihood of going on the DL. It's the opposite of what we think. Now, I would be stupid to trumpet those results, because one of the things that's going on is pitchers who are healthy and very good are going to pitch a lot. So pitchers who are hurting and are unhealthy, they're the ones who are getting ready to go on the DL. They may have a short leash anyway. So this is where, you know, trying to study this, trying to look at within a season, well, if he threw this much, what's the likelihood this guy will be injured now versus some other time? And that's the next step, and I'm in the process of digging through that data. But this is the end of my results, and I'd be happy to take your questions now and see what you have to say. Pitchers' fly ball, ground ball tendencies, or maybe that's explaining some of the home run results. I didn't look at that directly, but I did look at pitchers' typical home run rates, which are highly correlated with that. So you could break it out. Whether it would explain this or not, I don't know. But that's definitely something we could do. I didn't do that, though. Well, the question that these guys, I don't know how well y'all can hear, but he's asking, what if I had a pitcher who doesn't pitch the standard, you know, somewhere between 90 and 110 pitches? We take a Bob Gibson who used to throw a lot more pitches and put in the sample. Well, that's an interesting study that'd like to be done, and that's one you'd have to do in a lab, because pitching coaches won't allow it. And that's one thing. I mean, this is a study that's trying to say, what are people doing and what can we observe from that? And I think it would be very interesting. You know, I wish, you know, we could go back and we could study that, because clearly, you know, you go back in time and pitchers were pitching more. But then you have the question of, well, if it's expected of them to pitch more, maybe they were holding back more. So maybe they couldn't survive in this environment. I think it's an interesting question, and it's theoretical. But
the theory is when you throw the stronger arm.
Right. That's interesting, though, that these results don't support that, though. It definitely says the more that you're throwing, your performance does seem to diminish some. So it doesn't actually support that. It doesn't mean that doesn't matter. It might be interesting to look at pitchers, particularly those, I think it would be interesting to watch, who come up through the minors under different programs. And that's the thing that's amazing out there about how little study there is done of this, is that, you know, we should be going into minor league parks looking at this. What happens with these pitchers as they go through the minors and how they're treated? And I think, you know, we talk about college pitchers. Every year during the College World Series, you know, you're watching, you know, people screaming, I can't believe he's throwing him out there 2 days in a row, throwing 150 pitches, going to destroy his arm. You know, how much damage is actually being done? We can theorize about it, but there aren't a lot of public studies out there on that. There was a question over here for you. Well, again, you get to the issue of, but they're on the five-man rotation. So it could be just that they're conditioned that way. I mean, this does support saying, well, you don't gain much more by adding that extra day of rest. But I will say there's a huge advantage to being on the five-man rotation that has nothing to do with just trying to get all your pitchers in. Set. You always have another pitcher who can step up and skip a start. And then if you're trying to live on a four-man rotation when someone's down, you got to bring up someone from the minors. Do you have someone in the bullpen who can jump into that position? So that also motivates that as well. But certainly the results do support. I see several questions, but I am being told feverishly that I'm out of time. So I'll be happy to answer any questions you have afterwards. So thank you. I appreciate it.